Welcome back to the Gentleman Ultra podcast. I am your host, Richard Hall, and it's not Christmas yet, but it almost could be classed as a Christmas miracle. This is two out of two. I am literally counting how many times we can get us three together, but we've done it twice, so now there's no excuses. We're back, and we're having a little bit of a Napoli-Milan. Yeah, I'd say a very, very, very much a Napoli-Milan episode. So I'm here with Emmett Gates and Luca Hodges-Ramon. Emmett, how are you and how are you coping in the Boca?
I'm doing superb, buddy, doing superb. I was in La Boca yesterday, went around La Bombonera and went into a Diego shop and had to promptly leave. Otherwise, I would have bankrupted myself buying everything Maradona.
Yeah, it's not quite well. I think between Naples and the Boca, I think you know where you're going to put down some roots anyway. It's going to be one of the two. You'll probably come a bit more to you later. And Luca, how is the world of football scouting and talent accumulating? Are we still doing well there?
Yeah, all good. Thank you, Richard. That world never sleeps for sure. After a few games this weekend, nothing as glamorous as Emmett, unfortunately. But Emmett, do let me know when you unearth the next Diego Maradona over there. But very, very, very fitting Emmett's trip to La Bombonera yesterday and the Diego Maradona. The Diego Maradona merchandise, considering what we're going to be speaking about a bit today in today's episode.
Absolutely. Personally, I think you should get Emmett on commission. I can see something happening there. So,
so now you say that, Richard. Now you say that.
Look, you know, but then Emmett's judgment in football talent can't be great because he's a Juventus fan. But let's move forward from that. I'm coming for you in a minute, Luca, with that result. But anyway, against Juventus, but we'll talk about... No, we'll ignore that for the moment. We're going to ignore that for the moment because I'm just going to... We'll give a little bit of background. So obviously, we've got the game this weekend that is good. It's always captivating just because of the history of it. So I just want to touch on the form of the two teams that we're going to be talking about today. And we've also got an article from Emmett, which you can run us through. But this is at the Diego Armando... or San Paolo, whichever you prefer, stadium. And it's going to be a really interesting affair, I think. I'm quite looking forward to it, mainly because it brings back a lot of nostalgia, a lot of memories. Just a quick one for you guys. I'm going to rush through this, but at the moment, Gazzetta are looking, both teams going for a 4-3-3. We know the coaches already. Merritt, Di Lorenzo, Romani, Nathan, Mario Rui, Cujuste, Lobotka, Zielinski, Politano, Raspadori, and Caravaschilla. Milan are looking at going at the moment with Manian, Calabria, Kalulu, Tomori, Hernandez, Musa, Aldi. How do you pronounce this one, Luke? Is it Rangers? I've not heard.
Just pretend you're saying reindeer. I reckon reindeers. Yeah. However you want to have it. It depends whether you're doing it the Italian way or the Dutch way, I guess.
Yeah, ruin layout. Right, I'm going to come to you, Luca, because I did just have a little dig about that Juventus result.
I was hoping you weren't going to mention that.
Leaning in a little bit, leaning in. I mean, look, a lot of focus with the papers was actually about Juventus this morning, on the basis that they've obviously with Inter having Roma. This game's a big game. There are potentials for Juventus to take that. Step forward. I mean, if we just look at Gazzetta anyway, because we're here, there's a headline here, and I want to know what you think about it. I'll leave you with this. It says, "The more you spend, Milan, the less you score." Discuss.
Yeah, I think, listen, obviously, I think to really quickly touch on last Sunday, it was a very, as myself and Emmett almost predicted, a very drab affair. The sending off obviously did change the game to an extent, albeit I'm not sure how happy. I think there were some jokes made about the fact that it meant Juventus actually had to come out and try and attack a little bit, which
nobody wants to see. Nobody wants to see Juventus trying to attack.
at least of all Allegri, by the looks of it. But listen, it was almost like that, yeah, even when Milan had 10 men, both sides didn't really look like winning the game. And I think that is the headline there is exactly touching upon Milan's issue at the moment. There is not a regular enough source of goals. And so whilst, as I said last week, the form since the derby, apart from this week, obviously, which is another two games where Milan failed to score, has been good. That's been actually, I think, built upon structural organisation and not conceding goals, and then being able to rely on still what are good attacking players who can score goals and make the difference, but who aren't scoring in abundance. So unfortunately, the money spent at the moment doesn't look as though it is paying off, but I think it's also going to take time because I think there's been a lot of new players, which always takes time to try and essentially them to click and for that chemistry to come in those forward areas. I do think Rafael Leao, again, we were talking about it off air just now, I think his influence in every element of his game is brilliant up until the final third, where he needs to become more ruthless and clinical and almost become the leader that Giroud was over the last year or two. So I think that is essentially Milan's issue at the moment. And yeah, Juventus could capitalise this weekend, but as Emmett said last week, even getting that important win away to Milan, it would be a real travesty if they won Serie A playing the way they are. But stranger things have happened. Listen, Emmett might point towards Capello's Milan winning Serie A, scoring however many goals it was. I think 34 goals or something like that.
It was like 10 goals in 34 games.
Yeah, exactly. And then there was that mythical stat about the minutes that Maldini and Baresi went without conceding a goal or whatever. Yeah, whatever it was, which isn't actually true. But listen, it's possible. Like Italian Serie A, across the world, is won games and titles are won by defences being as they are, solid.
So, yeah, I mean, look, for me, it's a really good point. I think that when you we talk, well, for me, Vance, to you, Emmett, on being the sort of honorary Napoli contingent here, just for your intense love of Maradona. So we'll give that to you. I mean, look, the obvious question here is that we talked last week about, obviously, the striking prowess of both Juventus and Milan. Lucas, some really good points with that there. There's the obvious thing that Osimhen is not going to be playing again here. And you spoke a lot last week about the way that Napoli aren't really looking like they're performing because of injuries, because of the change of coach, etc. But, I mean, it's Raspadori looking like he's going to lead the line over Simeone. What are your thought processes on this now? I mean, how important is this game to Napoli? How much... And I suppose it's a double question, really. How important is the game to Napoli, but also how devastating could it be for Milan if Napoli win? And if Napoli do win here, do you think that that's going to start some sort of, not resurgence, but at least some sort of give it a bit of stability for Garcia?
I mean, it's a tricky one in the sense that, to be honest, I think Napoli, we spoke on this last week, and I think that Napoli's title defence is already gone. So, yeah. From a Naples perspective, I'd imagine a top four finish is the minimum objective. So even if Napoli beat Milan this weekend, I still don't see a bit of a resurgence just because Garcia is completely out of his depth and he probably will be sacked sooner than later. I imagine the reason why he hasn't been sacked is that De Laurentiis really hasn't got a better alternative. At this point, Conte was linked, but he has said basically he's taken the season out. He doesn't want to join mid-season. I don't think Fiorentina would let Vincenzo Italiano go at this point. So I think Garcia is only in a job because there's no one else better around. In saying that, if results deteriorate, then I think De Laurentiis will put his head on the chopping block. But I think, yeah, as you're saying, like Osimhen's out. Raspadori, I think, has did pretty well. And I'm a big fan of Raspa, to be honest. Yeah. He brings something different than Osimhen does. He's more technical. He's almost more of a number 10 playing as a false nine, but he can also score. So he'll offer a different threat and something for Milan. He'll give Stefano Pioli something different to think about. But just touching on what Luca was saying, I did a piece yesterday on Milan and how they were supposed to become less Rafael Leao dependent, but they've only scored 15 goals in the league this season. They haven't scored in the Champions League for 5 games now, which is an Italian record. If you go back to the 2 games against Inter in the semi-final, both games Milan didn't score. So they haven't scored in Europe now for 450 minutes. And obviously they bought in Samuel Chukwueze and Pulisic. But Pulisic has done well in Serie A, but he hasn't replicated that in Europe. Chukwueze really hasn't got going. You know, obviously it'll take time. That's natural enough. But I also looked at some stats and Milan have created only 11 big chances in their game so far, which is less than the likes of Monza, Empoli, Frosinone. So they're not creating and they're not really scoring. So you kind of think all the money that Milan have invested, it's going to take time. But as of now, they're still very dependent on Leao, and that's not where you want to be. You can't be in a position where you're dependent on one player, especially a player that, as Luca knows, he's very inconsistent. One minute he's genius, the next minute you're pulling your hair out because he's so infuriating. So yeah, Milan aren't going into this in good form. Napoli also in so-so form. So I think this is a really hard game to call on Sunday.
Well, I'm going to make you call it. I'm going to make you both call it.
Luca first.
I'm going to, and I'm going to tee this up nicely for Emmett's brilliant article that we're going to talk about next. I'm going to go 2-1 Milan with a Rafael Leao. Going against what we've just said, that he needs to be a bit more clinical in the final third, but a Rafael Leao man of the match performance, echoing Ruud Gullit 1988 against Napoli to clinch the Scudetto, and that run that Leao went on last season in the Champions League, which was also reminiscent of Gullit's run where he set up Van Basten and Leao set up Giroud. I'm hoping for a similar type performance from Leao, because I think that could be the difference.
That's a good let's see if that comes true. That would be quite likely. I could see that. Emmett, for you?
To be honest, I think it's going to be a draw. I'm not going to go for an exciting prediction as Luca, but I'm going to go for a draw because I just think both teams are kind of in so-so form. To be honest, if Milan had been in better form, I would have suggested a Milan win just because I think Napoli are rubbish now under Garcia. But just because of the form Milan's in the last couple of weeks, I just see this being a 1-1 game and nowhere near as exciting as the 3-2 from May 1988.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I mean, for me, I think first goal wins it here. I just think the confidence in both sides, but yeah, the first one on the score sheet, that's going to be the winner. Talking of 88, Emmett, I'm going to pass over to you in a second, because one thing you said in our WhatsApp group before this was that when you, like Link said, the brilliant article that you did for The Guardian and The Gentleman Ultra, obviously it's always combined, you look at the benches of these two teams at the moment, and and maybe the first 11s as well, but you compare it to the teams that played in that game. Napoli v Milan, Serie A title decider that still rankles to this day. Emmett, you wrote this, and as I said, it featured on The Guardian. Give us a quick rundown of this before we discuss it, because I mean, this is properly my sort of starting era for Serie A. I mean, it's really sad now. I hate to admit this, but I've still got the little plastic Forza Campioni figures right above me as I speak in my office, and one of them there is Maradona in that Mars kit, and obviously Ruud Gullit is another one in that beautiful kit. So yeah, this is superb nostalgia for me. But why did you write this piece?
So I wrote it because I think obviously it's a bit before my time. I mean, I was one when this when this game happened, but I think it evokes a certain, if you're a fan of history and especially Italian football history, for a lot of people, like for Luca, myself and you, Richard, for us the 90s was peak Serie A. But there's a certain generation that feels that mid to late 1980s period when Maradona was at Napoli, you had the three Dutchmen at Milan, you had the three Germans at Inter. For a lot of people, that era of Serie A is peak Serie A, when Platini was at Juve and Zico was at Udinese. So it evokes a strong sense of nostalgia and a pangin for, you know, the way, you know, it used to be better. Serie A used to be better, and especially that period. And the I in my opinion, Serie A probably from 1985 to about 2003 is probably the most competitive league in the history of the sport. Like, you will never see a league as strong from top to bottom as that. Like, you had Zico at Udinese, Socrates at Fiorentina, you know, Falcao at Roma, Maradona at Napoli, especially in this period that we're talking about, the late 80s. This is, I don't think any league, even now, modern Premier League, I don't think is as strong, because now you've basically a concentration of the top players at the top five teams in England. But in Serie A, in this period, everybody had a superstar, maybe two.
Yeah.
So then you have, the reason I wrote the article was because Napoli were playing Milan and it was first against second. At the time, I think I wrote this in about 18 months ago.
And, yeah, 2022.
Yeah, so basically Milan were top, Napoli were second, and this was like a fight for the title, in a sense. And here you have Maradona's Napoli. Maradona, obviously representing the south against the heavyweights of Milan from the north. Arrigo Sacchi had come in the year before, and there was a lot of doubts whether, you know, he's the man for the job. Who is this shoe salesman that's trying to implement this innovative form of playing, and especially in Italy? Like, he got rid of the libero, and, you know, Luca knows all about this as well. So you have this gigantic clash, and basically then it, Napoli's wheels started to fall off leading into this fixture, and basically this was going to be the Scudetto clincher in the San Paolo, as it was known then. And 85,000 rabid Neapolitans descending on a sunny Sunday afternoon when all games in Serie A kicked off at 3 p.m. on a Sunday. the long gone days, those days don't happen anymore. And it was just an epic clash. And I think when you take in the two shirts that the teams are wearing on that day, the talent on show, it just evokes so much nostalgia. Even, like, you know, Richard, I know you're the elder statesman of TGU, but I mean, you would have been only, what, about 40 when this game happened? You probably don't even remember this game.
I was 8 years old, so it was one of the first season outside watching it. So yeah, unfortunately, I can't tell you something. Yeah.
So I was one. Luca wasn't even born. So, you know, obviously for us, it's, you can only imagine what it was like to live through that era. And it just, the game itself was sensational. You know, apart from everything else, that the build up around it, the actual game was just a scintillating game of football.
Mm. No, absolutely. I mean, Luca, I know you've watched this back as well, but I mean, from a Milan perspective, from, you know, knowing the changes that were happening there, I mean, as Luca said, you know, you look at, if I just pull the facts of Roma out of the equation, people like Giannini, Volla, Fiorentina, Ad Baggio, I mean, it was, as Emmett says, it was just the most ridiculous period for Italian football. But I think that overridingly, Milan, at this point, I'm saying this from an Inter perspective as well, and Trapattoni's Inter with the three Germans is, you know, as you guys already know, my favourite team of all time. But realistically, this was the best, I think we touched on it last week, it's the best club side in the world, isn't it, really, ever? And it, I mean, it's a spectacular side that was created. And I mean, even now, how many times do people refer back to this? I mean, this must be very evocative of, you know, you're supporting Milan, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. As Emmett said, despite the fact that I wasn't born, obviously, at the time of this game, I think my memories, early memories of Milan sides, and especially watching Milan with my dad, was all about him harking back to, in particular, this era where, essentially, as Emmett said, Sacchi came in and revolutionised, well, not just the way Milan played, but Italian football. And I think it's on, if you go back and you can watch on YouTube the highlights of this game, you can read match reports, it's the quintessential example of the way Sacchi's teams played, a very bold, brave, high octane style of football. If you watch the game, it's very open. Not probably again the old stereotypes about Italian football and you know, defense first, clean sheet first, scoring goals later. This went completely against those stereotypes and the goals that are being scored in this game. Not just the general, I think, kind of clash bang wallop style, which you see because some of the tackles flying in as well. Obviously, we're talking about a different era of football, but the treatment of Maradona, which Emmett talks about in his article, and how he was essentially playing injured, well, 75% of the time in Serie A because of the special treatment that he would be given by no nonsense defenders. It really was, I think, as you said, Richard, the zenith, like the height of Italian football and the era in which Italian football did rule the world. And to kind of paraphrase the articles you write, Richard, on the Gentleman Ultra. Yeah. So just a great game to look back on, and even more so because of its significance, because as Emmett said, it's the game that essentially led Milan to clinch the title and start that era of dominance for Sacchi's side, and also prevent Napoli winning a historic back-to-back Scudetto. So I think for every reason, yeah, for TGU readers and Italian football fan lovers, you've got to go back and watch this game, even if it's just the highlights on YouTube, because it does evoke so many good memories and nostalgia, from the kits to the players on show. And as I said, Ruud Gullit, as Emmett said, he billed it as the kind of game between the best player in the world and the then holder of the Ballon d'Or. And you look at Ruud Gullit in that game, and he's just imperious. The power and the technique, the way he runs with the ball for the deciding goal where Milan make it 3-1, and it is very reminiscent. Actually, I recommend people to go back and watch that goal, and then watch Leao's run in the Champions League against Napoli, as I mentioned earlier. Frightening similarities in the way that the two run with the ball and then lay it on to the big man. Although, as much as I love Olivier Giroud, Van Basten, slightly more elegant, as I love Giroud and what he's done over the last 2 years in Milan colours. But yeah, no, I mean, amazing memories. And then just, as you said, the lineups of the two teams, some of the names again, probably a forgotten hero of that season, Paolo Virdis for Milan, who gets a double before that. Yeah. You know, he's never mentioned when you talk about conversations of great Milan players. He will never be mentioned. But essentially, that performance there is what clinched the title for Milan. And I guess shifted the dominance back to the north in terms of Napoli fighting against a Maradona, the rebel in Maradona clinging on to and latching on to that sense of southern defiance against the dominant north, and that rivalry which plays out so often within calcio, and that will be relived again this weekend. So yeah, a historic fixture and a brilliant write-up from Emmett to kind of capture everything that was going on. And the last thing I would touch on this article, which Emmett talks about towards the end of the article, which is really interesting, is in typical Italian style, and especially in Naples, where they're so superstitious, is of course the game and the result can't pass without speculation of some sort of scandal behind why Napoli ended up not clinching back-to-back titles, why their form fell off so drastically, involvement of the Mafia and Camorra, because they'd taken so many illegal bets on Napoli to win the title, and would they have to pay if they'd had to pay out these bets, what that would have done to them financially. So then putting it exerting influence on the players, lose games and throw the title. Only in Italy, obviously, could you have such speculation around what was essentially just a brilliant game of football. But it'd be interesting to hear Emmett's kind of take on it, having dealt to that side of things.
I was going to say, Emmett, we've got to be brief here because we've not got a lot of time left. But I was just saying, Luke's made a really good point there, because in that season, the first game Napoli loses to Milan on the 3rd of Jan, and it takes them to this. Then they just go on a winning spree. Careca scoring, Maradona scoring, just basically that combination. I mean, Careca for me doesn't get enough credit. That's a whole different podcast. They lose to Roma in March, and then it just seems to, apart from wins against Como and Inter, But then when Juventus beat Napoli, it just goes off a cliff. It doesn't make any sense in the form books. And let's face it, that side, it wasn't, the squads are smaller. What do you really think about that end to the season? Because when you look at it on paper, it's very, very odd.
Yeah, I mean, it is exactly as you say. Like, they lose one from the first 20 league games. They lose to Milan in the January, and then they go back on another winning spree. And then as soon as it gets to Easter, they lose against Roma, and the wheels just completely fall off. Like, and it's hard to explain, because obviously earlier that season, as you said, the squads were smaller. But Napoli had been knocked out of the European Cup by Real Madrid in the first round. And they also got knocked out early of the Coppa Italia. So it wasn't like they were playing once or twice a week. They were playing once a week. So that's kind of, as Lucas says, it's built into the myth that maybe, you know, there was exerted pressure on them from the outside by the Camorra to basically, you know, fold and not play well, not play to what they had been earlier in the season, because it's difficult to explain that drop off. Like, it, as you said, it goes right off a cliff. Like, they go from winning everything, decimating every team that they play on a Sunday, and then they can't buy a win in the last 2 months of the season. Yeah. So I talked to a Neapolitan journalist, Simone Di Mao, and he basically told me that he was writing a book with a former Camorra boss who was in Naples in the era of Maradona. He's in jail in Naples at the moment, and he's going to write a book with him. And apparently there's going to be details about this game and Napoli in the season, and it's going to be a tell-all. But when that book will come out, or even if it sees the light of day, who knows at this point? Like, I haven't come across anything about it or read anything about it. To be honest, as Lucas says, I think Maradona just got kicked into oblivion, and he was kind of running on empty by the end of the season. Mm. And I know Napoli wasn't a one-man team. You had Carreca, Bruno Giordano, Fernando Di Napoli, Salvatore Bagni. Like, they were a really good team. But it was obviously all hinging on Diego firing in all cylinders to obviously create, to be the, you know, Carreca wasn't really going to create a whole lot, as good a player as he was. I just think that the wheels just fell off. I think Maradona could only play through painkillers for so long, and Milan were just, you know, Van Basten had come back from injury, and he was, you know, pivotal in the running. And I think just for Hullet and Van Basten and Sacchi's implementation, you know, in terms of tactics, just paid off. And I think Napoli just ran out of gas. I don't really think there was Camorra involvement, because I think you definitely would have heard it by now. I mean, we're talking about 35, 36 years later.
Yeah.
I think something would have come out in the wash by now, especially because, you know, Italians love a scandal, as we've seen from the Betting scandal that's going on at the moment. It would have come out by now, long before now. So I think Napoli just fell apart. But I know that there was a player mutiny in the aftermath of this. And Maradona, it was led by Maradona. Well, no, it wasn't led by Maradona, but he always supported the players. And they basically wanted Bianchi, the coach, gone. And instead of sacking the coach, Corrado Ferlano, the Napoli owner, he basically backed Bianchi and sold Giordano. And there was a couple other players that basically led the revolt. So there was seismic change in Napoli after this. But I think, just to kind of touch on what Lucas said, like, this is a real sliding doors moment for Milan and Sacchi, because if Napoli win this, Napoli probably win the league. Milan then aren't in the European Cup the following year. And the myth or the aura of Berlusconi's Milan, Sacchi's Milan, is kind of born from retaining the European Cup in 89 and 90. But if they don't win this game, none of that happens. So it's a real sliding doors effect, I think. And it's just a great, great game. I mean, just one anecdote is Maradona's free kick in the first half. And basically, it's typical Diego free kick, bends it over the wall into the top corner from about 25 yards out. But Sacchi tells a story that years later Maradona told him that basically he was aiming for Ruud Gullit's dreadlocks. He's like, I'm going to put this ball into the top corner and it's going to skim off the top of Ruud Gullit's head off his dreadlocks. And if you watch that goal back, it does take a bit of a nick off Ruud Gullit's head. And Sacchi basically said that if any other player in history had told me that story, I would have thought it was a lie. But because it was Diego, I believed it because he could do anything he wanted with the football. I love that quote.
Well, there's a couple of things from that. I think we've got to call it a day today, but what I would say from both what you and Luca have said, and if anyone's listened to this podcast, obviously before the game this Sunday, is read Emmett's article on The Guardian or The Gentleman Ultra, because, and again, just to push that one, I mean, it is a really interesting read, and it's Napoli v Milan and the Serie A title decided that still said it's a fantastic game. Other takes very quickly for me is that Emmett, I have to say, Diego never ran an empty. He was always running on something. But without further ado, I think we'll leave it there. But we will be back next week, I hear, as well. So we are promising things and we are actually delivering. So yes, there we go. But no, my thank you to Luca and to Emmett. And for us, it's ciao for now.